going to open our Rural Communities and Economic Development Committee today, and I thank everybody for being here. It's so nice to have an audience. So we're going to start out with... I should probably tell the people a different order so everybody knows what's going on. We're going to start out with House Bill 4111. Then we're going to go to House Bill 4042. Then 4142, then 4029. So that's kind of the order, because there's some people who said they could or couldn't be here at different times, and we're kind of accommodating all that through this action. So we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4111A, and we'll have a short explanation. Representative Reed, you can come on up, and we'll have a short explanation from our administrator. If you want to bring anybody else up with you, you can.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 411A would establish the Public Infrastructure Commission to identify Oregon's public infrastructure needs, require government entities preparing infrastructure projects with total capital expenditure exceeding $50 million to submit a description of the proposed project to the state treasurer in the early stages of project planning, and direct the governor and state treasurer to appoint representatives to the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. There is no revenue impact, and there is a fiscal statement in your packets.
So with that, welcome, Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Tobias Reed from Beaverton. Appreciate you hearing the bill again. You've probably had the same reaction I do. This sounds familiar. You've had hearings and discussions about the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange in the past, and we appreciate that. We feel good about this bill moving us forward on that path. It comes to you with unanimous support from Transportation and Economic Development Committee in the House and a 48-4 vote in the House as a whole. It does two important things that Ms. Petrino has ably summarized, setting up the Public Infrastructure Commission and recognizing Oregon's participation in the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange. I don't think I need to reiterate all of the good reasons that this makes sense as an exploration for the state to meet our infrastructure needs using innovative techniques, marrying private agility and public accountability to stretch taxpayer dollars and deliver greater value. I think it's something we can all be excited about and the role it can play in expanding the growth of the economy. I would just like to say thanks to all the people who have got us thus far, or this far, and I think they're all going to say nice things and continue to participate in the process. Particularly would call out the woman to my right, Karen Williams, whom you've heard from before, and the Associated General Contractors who've helped us along with SEIU and a whole range of people who've been involved. I understand we have one technical change to make, the -4 amendments, but beyond that, we hope it will earn your support as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I'm Governor John Kitzhaber's Energy Policy Advisor, here to testify in support of House Bill 4111 as it will likely be amended by the -4 amendments. Wanted to just reiterate what the governor is interested in working with the legislature to figure out is how we can, what other tools in the toolbox we can put in place in order to maximize the value of taxpayer dollars and accelerate the rate at which we can procure public infrastructure projects. So strongly urge you to support the bill, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
So are there any questions for this group? Any questions? Thank you both for being here.
Thanks. And also, AGC didn't sign up, but they're here if you want to hear from them.
Yes, we could do that as well. So we have Brandon Adams, Jerry Henderson, and Peggy Woolsey. Is that correct? Come on up. And I'll put you down, John.
Senator Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brandon Adams. I'm a project director for McKinstry. I specifically work for their Energy and Facility Services Division. We're a company who has operated in Oregon for approximately 45 years. We currently have offices in 19 states. But here in Oregon, we employ 350 staff working throughout the state. About a third of that staff is professional office staff, engineers, project managers, cost estimators, designers, and then two-thirds of the staff is union craft labor. I'm here today to share our thoughts on the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange and Senate Bill 4111A with the -4 amendments. For one, we'd like to commend the work of the Infrastructure Task Force and resulting legislation providing opportunities such as this to focus the public dialogue on how Oregon intends to not only fund our infrastructure development but also operate and maintain that over time. We're a company that deeply believes in performance-based outcomes. We have a long history of executing projects with performance-based outcomes, utilizing existing models in procurement code, and feel that there is a deep benefit for the public sector client, and it's a good utilization of the people's money to execute infrastructure development. Performance-based delivery mechanisms are an effective way of managing risk. This program shifts the risk of budget and cost overruns to the from the owner to the contracting agency. Projects perform over time as designed. There's a shift of what's often an adversarial relationship at the end of a project into a more of a legacy relationship. That comes with the 20 to 30 year tail on the operations and maintenance after the project is complete. And the shared ownership and focus on outcomes create a different dialogue, one that shifts from a first cost mentality to more of a total cost of ownership, incorporating that life cycle cost of the project. Public sector will and always currently has and will always need multiple contracting vehicles. You know, we don't see this as a contracting vehicle that will replace the several legitimate vehicles that exist today. We feel it's an additional tool that provides value and flexibility to agencies to make the right decision utilizing the vehicle that fits their needs. I'm happy to support this bill and am available to answer any questions that you might have. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to everybody first and then we'll have questions. So.
I'm Jerry Henderson with the Sheet Metal Contractors Association in Oregon, SMACNA, if you know the acronym. I'm here to testify in support of the bill with amendments as well. SMACNA represents sheet metal and mechanical contractors from across the state. We have some very small contractors, and we have some rather, you know, rather large, sophisticated contractors like McKinstry. Before taking over at SMACNA, I was a company owner, one of the member companies, so I've had a long history in contracting. I don't think I need to explain the limited financial resources of the state and the ability for the federal government to help any longer with putting these kind of projects into place. The ability to finance those projects for the government isn't easily done at this point in time. Without some way of introducing private funding into the public equation, a lot of these projects are going to go unbuilt, and that's unfortunate for all of us. Design, build, finance, and maintain have been around for a long time in the private sector. The owners and developers that use that type of model for construction do it for two primary reasons. They get the projects to market faster, from concept to design. They get them built quicker. And they get a better value for their dollar. That's that simple. Those are the two reasons. It's time, we think, that the public sector should take advantage of that model for those reasons. Currently, there's one really large construction project in Oregon. It supports a lot of the economy. We have a disproportionate amount of our crews working at that construction site. When it's through, there's not a lot behind it right now. There's not a lot slated on the books to keep the momentum of the economy going forward. Our concern is, once it's done, the result isn't going to be good for the economy of Oregon. There needs to be some vehicle in place to help support construction moving forward, since it is such a large portion of the economy in Oregon. One thing for certain, if this legislation doesn't move forward, there's going to be a smaller pool of work for all the contractors, all the remaining contractors in the state, to do battle over. It's not a good picture from that standpoint. I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Peggy Woolsey, and I'm with Tax Fairness Oregon. We recognize and we support the need for upgrades to our infrastructure. We understand that there was a need to amend this bill. However, with the amendments, we've lost some of the soul of the bill. And the main points that we would like to make are that there is an increasing need for climate mitigating, sustainable, renewable upgrades to our infrastructure. The effective performance and technical decision-making capability of the public entities also needs to be ensured. The public transparency, oversight, and accountability of the projects is needed. And there is a need to engage in public-private partnership only when there is a high probability of a successful return on investment. The need to protect the public's investment in the expensive public infrastructures is also needed. And we hope that you will be able to include some kind of focus and priority on these items in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? Senator Bettsugar.
For you, you used the word renewable project. What is a renewable project?
Renewable energy project. I'm sorry. I left out a word.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you all for being here. So, John, do you want to be on the... Oh, and Arthur Towers? And is there anybody else that is interested in testifying on this bill? John, come on up.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. John Rakowitz for the record. I'm with AGC, Associated General Contractors. We have about 900 members across Oregon and Southwest Washington, and that includes a very broad cross-section of commercial contractors, open union, small, medium, and large, specialty contractors, general contractors. So we think we have a pretty good feel for what it looks like to the broad base of our industry on the commercial side. And nobody will get any argument from AGC that there is a tremendous need for infrastructure investment in the state of Oregon. There's also a need to, in our view, to do the comprehensive review of all available tools, including P3s or public-private partnerships. But not limited to that. And so I think I want to probably put on the record, Chair Roblin was a member of the task force, worked with us closely. We had major concerns enough that we would have opposed the original bill as it came out. We now can support the bill as it is amended, and we also support the dash fours. We think that helps further define this. I think public contracting is one of the most complex areas of the law. You have to spend a lot of years on it to really understand what its potential impacts are. But what we like and what is really important to us in this bill is Section 2. And Section 2 really gets at this. It creates the Public Infrastructure Commission and with a broad range of stakeholders with a lot of expertise. And that group then is charged with researching and evaluating all possible infrastructure financing methods and tools available to close our infrastructure financing gap. And finally, receive and analyze reports concerning any pilots that will be utilized. So we'll have a place that all the data, hopefully, that is necessary to understand what changes Oregon can, should make, are available to Oregon, both in any kind of public, any kind of permanent structure for changes, or any possible changes to the public contracting law. I will just say on the public contracting law that it's a 15-20 year highly orchestrated, balanced among interest, among policy goals. The public owners have their own policy goals. Contractors, we want a level playing field for all contractors in the state of Oregon. That's a goal. That competition works well for the taxpayers. So there is a lot embedded in Oregon's public contracting laws, and that's why we like the approach here that is essentially understand this issue in some real depth with a broad cross-section of people, and if there are pilots, that all the information available to those pilots, and I believe there will be pilots utilizing some sort of private financing. Understand, test those, evaluate that, and send that information as well to the commission. So before we do any massive changes that we don't understand what the consequences are, we have the data available and can bring that forward to legislators in a future legislature. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Arthur Towers. I'm the political director for Service Employees Union Local 503, and we support House Bill 4111. We have a couple of different interests in this bill, one of which is that we believe that especially the portions having to do with the West Coast Infrastructure Exchange will make it easier for our members' pension dollars to be invested in infrastructure. Right now, the Oregon Investment Council invests our pension dollars and is working with our members' retirement security, goes into a wide variety of investments. That really wouldn't change, but this would give them another avenue to have investment vehicles created that might be safer, might be able to do more for the local economy, the regional economy. And so that piece of it feels very much on the right track to us. The second place where we have an interest is around this new type of financing that people have been talking about, the design, build, finance, maintain, design, build, operate, maintain. And this poses a little bit of a risk to some of our members who maintain public infrastructure currently. And so we're a little bit nervous about the whole idea of transferring the operation and maintenance to the private sector. And we want to watchdog this process carefully to make sure that the savings achieved by the private operators, private maintenance companies, isn't achieved solely by cutting the wages and benefits of the people who do the work. We like the idea that perhaps these private operators could contract back to the public sector of the work. There's lots of ways to go about doing it. We aren't scared of this, but we are concerned about it, and you just want to continue monitoring it as we go forward. But we support the legislation. We also like the earlier version better, but this bill gets us down the road, so we would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Are you okay with the dash force?
Yes, we are.
Good afternoon, Chair Rowland, members of the committee. My name is John Molis. I represent the Oregon State Building Trades Council, which is an umbrella organization for about 25,000 union construction workers. Here to testify in support of House Bill 4111 with the Dash 4 amendments. And rather than repeating the comments made by the earlier folks, I will just agree with them. A couple of things I would add would be that I think this will help grow the pie and create more work opportunities throughout the state, and I think there's certainly great value in that, and obviously that creates more jobs for our members and contractors, and that's a very important issue for us. I'm meeting tomorrow, just coincidentally, with a couple of representatives from one of our national pension funds that's actually looking at possibly financing a public works water project here in the state, completely independent of this, but a lot of our pension funds are actively looking on how can we invest our dollars into public infrastructure projects as another investment opportunity, and obviously it, one that creates work. So hopefully we'll learn from that and be able to share that with this group as we move forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for this group? Thank you. Again, I'll give one last chance. Anybody else out there that wanted to speak to House Bill 4111A? We're going to close our public hearing on 4111A. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 411A. Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 4 amendments dated 2/19/2014.
Senator Bearsugar moves to adopt the Dash A4 amendments dated 2/19/2014. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, they are adopted. Senator Bearsugar.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 4111A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Bearsugar moves House Bill 4111A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Discussion.
Yes.
Just a drafting point. I noticed that on page 2, under section 2, where this commission is set up, you have the contractors have to be registered in Oregon. However, the trade organizations do not, it appears. Also, it isn't clear that the representative of the city, county, port, special district doesn't mention Oregon there, or this, I assume the state contracting agency would be Oregon, but I just want to put on the record that that is not clear in the bill.
I think we're okay, but thank you for that. Okay. Any other discussion? Is there any objection to this bill? Seeing none, it is passed, and I will carry this bill. With that, we'll close our hearing on and work session on House Bill 41411A, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 4042A. Representative Boone can come up as we have a short explanation. Representative Boone, if there's anyone else you want to have come with you, you can bring up anybody you want with you if you have anybody.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4042A would add renewable marine energy to the types of energy for which availability of net metering is required by statute. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and committee. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, and we're going to have one more when we...
Jason's in reserve.
In reserve, okay. We'll play musical chairs if we have to. So here I am again before you with yet another what I call a housekeeping bill to update our statutes to enable our ocean energy sector to move forward. And I'm just going to read some of the points that I wanted to make because I have a tendency to think that everybody knows what we're talking about sometimes, and this is just sort of a little reminder. So I'll do a quick introduction, and then I'm going to hand it over to the real experts. So ocean energy represents a tremendous source of clean, reliable energy, and Oregon leads the nation in to develop this new source of carbon-free electricity. Oregon Wave Energy Trust and Oregon State University and others are working to ensure that it has the least possible impact on the ocean and its users. And this bill is about net metering, and it's a well-established mechanism to facilitate interconnection of distributed generation. The current law already permits a variety of sources, such as wind and solar, and this bill simply adds wave energy, tidal energy, and offshore wind to this mix. And this is the acceptable form of generation that we seek to advance in Oregon. Net metering is the quickest, easiest, and cheapest way to bring on small amounts of power, and this bill increases the fairness of the existing statute. And I want to emphasize another piece of this that I always never fail to administer when I'm talking about it, the emergency preparedness and disaster resilience element. The transmission grid will likely be down on the coast and will be cut off from the existing energy delivery system. So this is something that we could get our systems, one of the first systems that we're going to want to get back up or be power to power buildings, schools, et cetera, if they're still standing and are usable. And there is no opposition in the House in either the committee or on the floor. And one thing, the Territorial Sea Policy Advisory Council revised the plan so that it clarifies the state's preference to initiate development through pilot projects and phased development, and net metering will help enable this to happen. So I'll turn it over to Captain Williams to do the military piece. Thank you.
Actually, if I may, the Oregon Military Department is here.
And I'm sorry, I should defer to the... You can tell I'm not in the military.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Roy Swofford, Deputy Director of Installations for the Oregon Military Department. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I'm here to support House Bill 4042A to add wave energy as a renewable energy resource for net metering. Adding this to the existing statute will benefit OMD, the Oregon Military Department, and certainly others along the Oregon coast. Over the past 3 years, the Oregon Military Department has been engaged in supporting the development of using ocean renewable energy as a generation resource. The initial goal of such facility would be to service the energy needs of Camp Raylia, with wave energy included in net metering, the Oregon Military Department could acquire and use this renewable energy for the energy needs at Camp Raleigh. Energy independence and energy security are operational imperatives for the Oregon Military Department. Renewable energy sources are important alternatives to the electrical grid and the fossil fuels currently used for our backup power generation. Camp Raleigh requires renewable energy to meet mission requirements, including Clatsop County disaster recovery in the event that windstorms, earthquakes, or flooding disrupt the electrical grid. Oregon is an ideal location for ocean energy conversion based primarily on its tremendous wave resource and wind resource. Marine energy converters include many designs for wave energy, hybrid wave energy, and offshore floating wind systems that can be connected to shore by submarine power cables. A shore station could house controls, power conditioning, and transformers to ensure the power meets grid integration standards for net metering requirements. With the renewable energy facility suitability study areas identified at various locations in the Oregon Territorial Sea, including one off the coast at Camp Raleigh, it's time to include wave energy in the net metering law. The Territorial Sea Plan Advisory Committee revised Part 5 so that it clarifies the state's preference to initiate development through pilot projects and phased development. Net metering will help enable this to happen. This concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Rick Williams. I live in Oregon City, Oregon. As far as background for my comments, I'm an Oregon State University construction engineering graduate and a retired submarine captain with nuclear power experience, and I'm under contract through the Oregon Wave Energy Trust to support the Oregon Military Department at Camp Raleigh. I'd like to make 4 points and then expand on them, if I may. The net metering at Camp Raleigh and pilot projects make sense from an engineering perspective. It makes sense from a programmatic perspective. It makes sense from a stakeholder outreach perspective. And then finally, our mission at OWET has been the responsible development of wave energy in Oregon, and this supports that. To expand a little bit, wave energy was competitively selected by the Oregon Innovation Council as Oregon's next emerging industry. The Oregon Wave Energy Trust was established to carry out that tasking. We've worked diligently with our existing industries to pursue responsible development and reduce conflict. Starting with small projects and proving the technology during a long evaluation cycle is a responsible approach. When we first had our meeting with the fishermen and the crabbers at Camp Raleigh, this is a couple years ago, they asked us, please start small, please try single or small arrays of devices and see that they work, and we'd really appreciate if you could do things that are designed not to conflict with crabbing. Being able to connect single and small arrays of devices to shore to prove them is consistent with their request to start small, and to start small you have to start with a net metering approach because it's far less expensive than becoming a distribution generator. Oregon State University has a test center in Newport for mid-depth and deep sites. The Oregon Military Department is collaborating well with Oregon State University, as Camp Raleigh is the right place for shallow and mid-depth testing and evaluation. So it complements the PMEC Pacific Marine Energy Center facility, and we're also hoping with Dr. Batten to leverage the expertise at Oregon State so we have a coherent test architecture and the expertise from Oregon State. Camp Raleigh has a small load of 500 to 900 kilowatts, a beach landing for cables. Most importantly, it's the only site in Oregon that has a professional engineering staff, as represented by Mr. Swofford, a professional facilities management staff, a professional environmental compliance staff, and they are compliant-oriented, and they have 30 years of baseline data for Camp Raleigh. Wave energy in Oregon will make the most sense in the early days at Camp Raleigh, because Camp Raleigh is unique that their energy needs are mission-driven by energy security, energy independence, and disaster resilience. So while wave energy may not make the market hurdle because we're blessed with low energy prices, the mission hurdle at Camp Riley is quite high, and we think that small arrays of ocean energy devices would make very good sense there. I did the feasibility study for Camp Rylea. I have been involved with my team on the conceptual design, and if there are any questions on that that Mr. Swofford would like me to answer, I'm ready to do that, and thank you for the opportunity.
Any questions?
Mr. Chair, if I may, Dr. Batten is in the room today.
Yeah,
if you had any questions
list.
For...
She has on the list, too. She'll be up next.
Oh, okay.
I just want to say thank you. I actually am one of those people who really believe Camp Rylea is the right place to get started for a whole lot of reasons, but the mission reason is number one. It helps us find out more, and it is about small-scale kind of development. And you're pretty far ahead of the game with respect to anybody actually going to put a device in the water except the next guest. So, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
So with that, we're going to invite Belinda Batten. And is there anyone else that wants to speak to House Bill 4042? Okay, just wanted to make sure before. So thank you for being here, Doctor.
Thank you for having me. I'm Belinda Batten. I'm a professor of mechanical engineering at Oregon State University, and I'm director of the Northwest National Marine Renewable Energy Center. And as you just heard from our previous panel, NIMREC, which is our acronym, is busy putting a deep water testing facility in Newport for utility scale wave energy converters to prove this technology, to connect it to the grid. And we are highly supportive of this bill. It could be a game changer for wave energy, putting them on an equal status with other renewables. And we believe, just as the previous testimony said, that Oregon Military Department will be one of the first to take advantage of this opportunity, proving out some of the shallow water devices, and we're working very closely with them and support their testimony. Thank you.
Any questions for Dr. Ben? Thank you very much. We're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 4042A, and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 4042A. Senator Boettcher.
Chair Roblin, I move House Bill 4042A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Boettcher moves House Bill 4042A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. Bill passes. I will carry this one as well. It's kind of in my neighborhood, so I thank you for that. We're going to close our work session on House Bill 4042A. And this one. And we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 4142A. And with that, we'll have a short explanation of the bill from our administrator. And we can have Representative Vega Peterson. I think I saw you here. So.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4142A would amend the definition of rural area to be an area outside an urban growth boundary of a city with a population of 40,000 or more as the boundary is acknowledged on the date in which an application is submitted for the Strategic Investment Program. There is a revenue statement in your packet, no fiscal impact, and there's also a dash two amendment in your packet.
So thank you for visiting. As we were saying in our previous hearing, it looks like the House has gone done their business and they're coming over to the Senate. So we appreciate you coming over here.
We want to make sure you're busy during
okay.
the So thank you, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson. I represent House District 47, which is in the city of Portland. It's the part of Portland that's east of I-205. I'm here today to bring you House Bill 4142, which concerns the Strategic Investment Program, or SIP. And the administrator is going to be handing out a packet that contains some information about SIPs. One of them is just a one-pager to give you some background on what it is. The SIP is one of the economic development tools that we have in the state. It provides traded sector companies a 15-year property tax abatement based on the size of their investment. So there are two kinds of SIP. There's an urban SIP, which places a cap of $100 million on the value that can on the property tax value that can be assessed, and a rural SIP, which has a lower cap of only a $25 million investment. So This bill does a couple things, but I'll start off by saying what it doesn't do. So this bill doesn't do anything to end SIPs or alter the size of the investment that's needed to qualify for either one of the SIPs. And it doesn't really have anything to do with some of the other things that touch on SIPs, like the community service fees or gain share or anything like that. It's also not a land use bill. I know we have a lot of those going around here, and it doesn't really touch on that. Instead, this bill deals with an inequity between who can qualify for an urban SIP and who can qualify for a rural SIP. So why is there a difference between an urban SIP and a rural SIP? Originally, the crafters of this program wanted to encourage economic vitality in rural areas, and they wanted to get jobs into rural areas. And so for the purposes of SIPs, areas that are designated as rurals qualify for the rural SIP, and those designated as urban get the urban SIPs. As currently set in statute, the term rural area refers to an area located entirely outside of an urban growth boundary of cities with a population of 30,000 or more. And the urban growth boundary, as it was set on December 1st, 2002. Since that date, over 11 years ago, the urban growth boundaries have grown. Thousands of acres have been added to them. Now we have thousands of what would otherwise be urban areas that are actually eligible for rural SIPs, despite being inside UGBs. In the Portland area alone, there are 5,300 industrial acres that exist inside UGBs that are eligible for rural SIPs. Since these urban areas can offer property tax benefits equal to those that are available outside the UGBs for rural areas, the rural areas of our state don't really have any competitive advantage with their rural SIPs. So this bill does three things. First of all, it changes the criteria to determine whether land can qualify for a rural SIP or urban SIP eligible using a current urban growth boundary as the date on which an applicant submits an application to have a SIP. So it just updates the boundary. So today it would use today's urban growth boundary. In 10 years it would be whatever the UGB was in 10 years. The second thing it does is understanding the importance of having stability for businesses and not wanting to change anything for those existing businesses that have the rural SIPs, even though they're within the UGB right now. Section 2 of the bill grandfathers in existing projects within the strategic investment zones. And I've actually been working with the company that's affected by this, and there's the Dash 2 amendment that has some clarifying language around that. And then finally, and one of the things that we looked at was making sure that those areas, those rural areas in our state that are still struggling out of the recession, what can we do to help those out? And so one of the things this does is raise the cap on what it takes to be considered rural from 30,000 to 40,000. That means that those cities that are in the nexus between 30 and 40,000 would now be considered for the rural set, and that includes Grant Pass and McMinnville. There's a list of those cities, the populations of cities in that packet. There are a couple other ones that are listed in that change area, but they're already part of an urban growth boundary, so they would be considered rural for the purposes of this program. So the motivation for doing this was really after being on the Revenue Committee and hearing economic forecast after economic forecast that talks about, you know, the metro areas are doing better out of this recession. We've got some great development happening in Bend. We're starting to see it in Salem. But we're still lagging behind in our rural areas. We still need help for those areas. And this bill is a chance to make a small change to improve a tax tool that we have that drives the investment in the way that it was originally intended to do. It's a chance for us to use this tax tool to help out the people of rural Oregon. I understand that there's opposition to the bill because some feel that even though, you know, the designation might not be quite right, it's a tool in the toolbox that we have, we use that phrase a lot in the Revenue Committee, a tool in the toolbox to help grow economic development. And I understand that concern. I'm not anti-development. I mean, we're such an income tax reliant state for our revenue that we need those jobs. So I'm open creating a SIP that addresses the mid-size investment that's being used now for this SIP. But I want it to be geographically neutral so that all of Oregon is equally able to use that kind of benefit. So that's the bill in a nutshell. One of the other areas in the packet, or one of the other papers in the package, shows who has qualified for the SIP since its inception. This rural SIP has been used 12 times. 11 of those times have been in truly rural counties. It's only been used one time since its inception in an area that would have been disqualified because of the changes that we're making now. But as I said, we're grandfathering that in. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. Any questions?
Nope.
No? Thank you very much for being here.
You.
And Jonathan Ames, is there anybody else that would like to speak to House Bill 4142? Saying no, you get to be the final speaker on this.
Wow. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jonathan Eames, and I'm here on behalf of Genentech, and I'm glad I have the opportunity for you to not only sip but gulp from my cup of knowledge. That was terrible. Sorry. That was really, really bad.
Are you for or against the
I am not going to say. Actually, I am here on the amendments to the bill. If you take a look at the amendments, it's actually fairly simple. So in the original bill, when we talked about the grandfathering, and so Representative Vega Peterson talked about the one company that was now within the urban growth boundary, which is Genentech. And in the original bill, it talked about making sure that companies that have a existing property or qualifying property on a parcel of land would not be subject to the principles of the bill. However, when Genentech bought their property to be able to build their plant there, it was on multiple parcels of contiguous land. So instead of the term parcel, what we've done in the amendment is just to say parcel or parcels of contiguous land. So you can combine them into one parcel or leave them as parcels, but it was just a number of parcels that actually, because in the case that we were to expand, we did buy extra parcels of land if that was to be the case. So that's the purpose of the language, is to just to clarify that Genentech truly would be grandfathered into the elements of the bill.
Any questions for Jonathan? None? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator.
We're going, and again, last chance if you want to speak to this bill. Okay. Nobody there. We're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 4029A. Nope, sorry, 412042. That would have been good if that's the other one. Got you all by surprise. 4142A, we're going to close that public hearing, and we're going to carry over a work session on House Bill 4142A to Tuesday of next week. So we aren't going to take that up right now. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 4029A. We have a couple of our distinguished representatives here, so we can invite them to the dais as we have a short explanation of the bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4029A would authorize the owner of a tract of land to withdraw from a city if that city is located within Metro and it was incorporated between January 1, 2000 and January 1, 2005. And set some other criteria as well for that withdrawal. There's no revenue impact and the minimal fiscal impact.
And with that, again, it's obvious that we're the place to be. Representatives are all running over to the Senate, so here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. For the record, Bill Kenemer, State Representative, District 39, a pleasure to be here with Representative Fagan as well, to talk to you about House Bill 4029. This bill will have something of a familiar ring to you because there was a discussion last session about 708, and it was an effort to look at the failure in 9.5 years, or at that time 8.5 years, to progress with the comp plan and land use rules in the city of Damascus. And it had a different proposal. It wanted to do development within the county. And actually, that violates the Metro Charter. And this bill corrects that. And we'll talk about that a little bit more. And I'll try to move through this as quickly as I can. A couple of things about this bill. It applies, it's very carefully written, so it only applies to Damascus. It's not opening up a huge land use can of worms. Secondly, it comes to you from the House on a 51-0 margin.
because I think there are some compelling arguments to be made about why this is an important bill. As a former county commissioner, I'd like to give you just a couple of minutes of background on it. About 15 years ago, I was Clackamas County Commissioner, and we were talking about urban development in the Portland metro region. And as you know, we have Metro, which works as a land use group to help us figure out how to manage growth. And what they were talking about was trying to find balance in urban and industrial development throughout the region so you didn't create congestion or overutilization or violate reasonable economic or environmental standards. And one of the things that we were talking about that time was that how most all of that development was going to Washington County to the detriment of the environment out there and not to Clackamas County to its financial detriment. And as we talked about that, we began to have discussions, and they said, you need to open up urban lands. Well, we started talking about that in Clackamas County, and it was an interesting problem because in Clackamas County, town center, Clackamas industrial area, the suburbs around all of that area, which were substantial, had all been developed by the county. And increasingly, there was pressure to say, let's develop these within cities. And so after considerable discussion and compromise, we worked together to come up with a plan that we would do urban expansion in that area east of Clackamas Town Center in the industrial area in what was Happy Valley and at that time the community of Damascus, and that we would do this within the context of cities and the county would get out of the provision of those urban services. And it was a good process, and folks were encouraged. And, in fact, people expected it to be a speedy process, and a lot of people were encouraged to buy property, and those, and you'll hear from a few here, also who owned property at that time had expectations of urban development. And the problem that brings us here today is Damascus was ultimately incorporated in 2004, and now, 9.5 years later, we still don't have a comprehensive plan or land use plans in hand. And a couple of issues with that. One is that, first of all, a lot of these people, and I included, thought this would happen within a year, year and a half. Never imagined that people of good faith, and there have been lots of them, would come to such loggerheads. But it's what's happened. And so we have to look at, well, what's the solution to this? Well, we're 5.5 years past what the law when the law requires this to occur, and I think it's time to intervene. And we look at, you know, what we have here is we've had a lot of fighting, but not the cooperation and the consensus building that needs to happen. And we're desperately in need of jobs and housing, and my co-sponsor will talk about that in a little bit. So what are the solutions? Well, your solutions to doing land use planning are, one, local. And I'm a big believer in local control. But after 9.5 years of gridlock and holding people hostage, I think it's time to say we need to figure out how to move beyond that. Another possibility is initiative. And then the third one is coming to the legislature and allowing a process. And so we worked very hard to create a bill that would provide an alternative to the gridlock that's here. And our real goal here is not at all to be adversarial. We want the city of Damascus to occur and to thrive and to meet the expectations. And this bill in no way directs how that shall occur. And that's up to the people there. But it says that if we're gridlocked like this, what happens is we're going to set up a process where areas where out in the that are within a half-mile zone of an existing city have the opportunity to have a hearing and de-annex from the city. And then if they wish to develop, they can ask to be annexed into the new city, and they can develop that way. And the idea here is to begin to allow some of these people that are held hostage the opportunity to move on and to also create incentive for the city of Damascus to come together and work together and to follow the process. And you'll hear also in the testimony that follows, there are a number of folks who have asked for hearings to disincorporate from the city and have not even been granted a hearing, much less that dispensation. I think there are a couple of other factors, and then I'll turn it over to my co-carrier. One of them is that as we crafted this bill, we wanted to try and retain as much local control as there was possible. And so what this bill says is that when or if, I guess, when or if the city comes up with the required comp plan and the required land use plans, this bill goes away. And also, in the event that they're not able to do that, then in roughly 10 years, in 2015, this bill just flat out sunsets. It's time to figure out a different plan because obviously the plans aren't working correctly. And I think there's also a growing frustration, and you'll hear this, I think, from some of the people who come today who are owners. In November, they had a vote to disincorporate 2,945 people, 63.5% of the people voted to disincorporate. I think there's a narrow window here that we need to go through, and that's the reason this bill is before you. And I would say that 2,945 people contrast to about 1,600 who voted originally for incorporation. So I think it's time to get off the dime and move it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Shamia Fagan. I'm the state representative for House District 51, which includes Outer Southeast Portland, Southwest Gresham, Boring, Damascus, Happy Valley, and some unincorporated Clackamas County. And as a legislator who represents two counties in multiple cities, I see it as my duty first and foremost to represent the people who are within those jurisdictions. And this bill today is indeed about the people of Damascus. As my colleague laid out, the people of Damascus voted to become a city in 2004, and state law gave them up to 4 years to come up with a comprehensive plan. But we're not before this committee today, the fifth year after they became a city, or the sixth, or seventh, or eighth year. But 9.5 years after the city was formed, still no comprehensive plan that allows people to build on their property and businesses to expand on land in Damascus. Now today you'll likely hear testimony from city officials in opposition to this bill, promising that a comprehensive plan is on the horizon, that we should wait. Sadly, this is the same promise that has been offered to the people of Damascus over and over and over again for over 9 years. In fact, last night I did a quick Google search of Damascus, Oregon, and the Oregonian headlines themselves tell the story. Here's just a handful. Damascus kills comprehensive plan. Here's another one. Damascus says yes, no, maybe, no to comprehensive plan. And another one. In struggling Damascus, political chaos impedes long-sought solutions. And finally, Damascus still in stalemate over comprehensive plan. The story told in these headlines is a city that has tried, and let's be honest, tried earnestly by good people to put together a comprehensive plan, but they have failed. And they've failed at the expense of property owners who want to develop and grow. And last November, a citizen initiative was put on the ballot to disincorporate. And I actually went to the debates. And interestingly, the same arguments that you will likely hear today from the opposition were the opposition's against disincorporation. They told people, don't disincorporate. We're about to pass a comprehensive plan. And the people who voted, my constituents, rejected those arguments by nearly a 2-to-1 margin. The voters supported disincorporation. Sadly, a technical legal hurdle, which amounted to a triple majority requirement, meant the ballot measure technically failed. But what didn't fail is the effort of the people of Damascus to express their utter frustration. I heard them loud and clear. So did my colleague. This bill is not the solution that was the full solution, full relief to the nearly 3,000 people who voted to disincorporate. But it is the first forward movement for a community in nearly a decade. In particular, you'll hear testimony in support of this bill from businesses who want to expand but have been held hostage for years. And finally, this bill does have an emergency clause. And you may hear testimony from some who say we should wait. But there is an emergency in this community. Recent data shows that in the Tri-County area, Multnomah County is restored to 104% of pre-recession job levels. Washington County is up to 114%. Clackamas County is at 44%. 44% of pre-recession job levels. For the families out of work, this is an emergency. And every month that we delay, they go without a job and they fall further and further behind. Colleagues, we ask that you would move this bill in its current form. Thank you for your indulgence.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Bearshore.
Does the city of Damascus, they have a city council and a mayor?
Yes.
And they have elections for city council and mayors, and they've had multiple elections for 9 years. I don't know, in my neck of the woods, when the city council and mayor aren't doing their job, we have recalls. In fact, they're quite often where I come from. I'm just a little, if the people of Damascus are so upset of what's been going on with their city council, with their representation, have they had any recalls?
I'm not aware of any recalls. However, there have been multiple changes on the council and even over the course of the 10 years and in the mayor's office. But notably, they didn't even want to move into a new council or new mayor. They voted to stop being a city by a 2-to-1 margin in just this last November, and I think that's incredibly telling. That's the last word that we've heard from the people of Damascus, was a 2-to-1 margin supporting the voters of Damascus supporting the disincorporation measure.
And in that regard, also in August, one of the city councilors did resign out of utter frustration, and it left them at a 6-6 impasse, and they haven't been able to solve that and replace that person. I think there's some interesting questions about community action, but I think the other is the broader one. Don't we have responsibility to these landowners to get them out of this gridlock? And don't we have responsibilities to make our land use program work? It makes no sense, as a former county commissioner and a representative for the area, for us to be overloading the west side of the Portland region and not putting housing and industrial stock on the east side. It's been a long-range plan, and to let it be thwarted by people who are committed to fighting, apparently, instead of finding resolution, I think is entirely the wrong way. And, you know, the wisdom of our government says that there are three ways to change. We can change locally, we can change through initiative, we can change here. And I think it's time. I have been flabbergasted that the elections, and there have been huge changes. I shouldn't say this, but I call them regimes, because people sort of get elected on with commitments. And I think in good faith, these people come forward, but they've not been able to get it done. And there are times when you just don't get it done. Well, you know, if what you're doing isn't working, you ought to do something different. And that's why I step forward at the request of a lot of Clackamanians that live in Damascus and said, you know, it's time to say enough's enough. If I'm so glad that I don't live in Damascus after nearly 10 years. I and many of them, as you're going to hear probably, hopefully they'll be nice about it, but are fit to be tied. It's time to move on, and we have the option to allow that, and incidentally, only in little layers, and that's to give the city incentive and time to get rolling again. I want that city to succeed. There's nobody that wants that city to succeed more than I do. I've been invested in it for 15 years. But how do we get it off of gridlock? And promises don't. You know, LCDC on three occasions has given extensions. I think they're done with it. And so it's time to move, and there are promises of an election coming up, but let's just take a moment to look at that.
Don't take too much time, because there's a lot of people.
Thank you, and you're right. And I'm sorry. See, I get a little wound up. Let me just say a couple of things about that, though. Even their attorney says that it will probably take till the November election to get a final result out of that, and then we have strong promises that it will be appealed. So we're looking at 2 to 3 years from now, more. I think it's time for us to act. And I thank you for your indulgence, and my apologies for getting carried away. Sometimes
just a short comment.
Short comment. Okay, short comment. This is not a question.
Not a question. Make him leave while he gets right. The comment I have is I'm nervous that the legislature is replacing the responsibility of the citizens of Damascus. And that makes me nervous.
I understand. Thank you both.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we try to go pro a bill and then the opposite of, and so on, back and forth. So we will jump around a little bit on the table, but the next group is Jan Lossley, Jim DeYoung, and Richard Johnson. I tend to give my legislators a little bit more freedom with respect to time. Everybody else, I would ask you to keep them fairly distinct. Okay. But you can go first.
All right. Thank you. Chair Roblin and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity.
And do mention your name first, so thanks.
Pardon me. Jim DeYoung. I'm one of the city councilors of the city of Damascus. And I'm thankful for the opportunity to address you, Chair Roblin, and the members of the committee. I also represent today a group known as Citizens for Moving Damascus Forward. And so much of what I want to say represents, I think, the collective opinion of the City Council. But near the end, I want to speak on behalf of myself as an individual. Well, I can well appreciate the position of those who wish to withdraw from Damascus in order to develop property, for I, too, am a landowner in Damascus, and I've been there for 42 years. I think the proposed legislation is misconceived, contrived, and actually detrimental to the development of Damascus, after all, and the timely production of a comprehensive plan, which is the common goal of the bill and all, I think, who testify here today. Now, I have a paper that I've presented my testimony in, and you all have been given a copy of that, I think, electronically, so I'm not going to read that, thankfully. I'm sure that you think. And I raise issues concerning various matters. One is that of authority, for the bill says that virtually automatically, after a property has applied to the city council to withdraw and the council does not act positively about that, they automatically can withdraw. And I ask, by what authority can that be granted? And I suppose the answer at the present moment is that this law, this bill, if it becomes law, grants that authority. But I'm really concerned about the state legislature coming to bear upon a charter of a city and acting in that way. So that's an issue of authority. Another issue that it has been claimed that the city has been dysfunctional for 10 years and gridlock has been there. Well, that's really not the case. Certainly, it's been the case for the last three or four years, but we have been trying to get a comprehensive plan passed for several years, and we actually got one done, and it was offered to the state LCDC. That commission sent back to us some revisions that had to be made, and that basically took place in 2011, and then a vote took place in 2012 that overturned that comprehensive plan. So as you can see, the council is up against not only trying to achieve the demands of what the state requires regarding a comprehensive plan, but we also, by an amendment to our charter, have to present every plan to the people for a positive vote. And that has been the rub, let's say. I also ask questions in regards to the relationship of this bill to LCDC. The update of all of that, however, is that last Thursday, LCDC passed a unanimous vote to hold Damascus accountable for a comprehensive plan, and failing to do so is going to, on April the 1st, initiate the withholding of state revenue sharing until the city pays back a collective amount of $300,000. So that is another degree of urgency put upon the city and the city council and the voters to pass a comprehensive plan. And perhaps it's fortunate that these two things are coming together. I address the matter of the emergency clause, and I go on then to talk about unintended consequences. When I first read this bill, which was only a couple weeks ago, I was struck by the fact that this bill allows certain property owners on the boundary to withdraw from Damascus. But as you stop to think about it, after that first occurrence of withdrawals, the boundary is moved by LCDC and Metro to a new place, and this bill still would then allow the next group of people or owners of property to withdraw. The boundary then becomes jello, and it becomes virtually impossible for us to ever have a settled boundary in the foreseeable several years and for us to present a plan to LCDC. It's like peeling back the layers of onion so that as one layer goes, a new layer appears and new boundary adjacent owners can withdraw from the city. And therefore, the purpose for which this bill is intended to force, you might say, a comprehensive plan to get done and approved or acknowledged by LCDC can't be accomplished. We'd have to go back each time with a new boundary, reconfigure the building lands inventory, the density of the city, where industrial, commercial, and residential land will go, what the density should be, and probably around the time we finish that calculation, somebody else will withdraw. So the unintended consequence is that we could never get a comprehensive plan done, final one at least, and present to LCDC. Now, I want to offer a compromise, and let me suggest a better resolution than what this bill is purporting. I'm suggesting, first of all, that LCDC and Metro work together to allow the present comprehensive plan that has been finalized before council, wasn't accepted totally by council, the majority did not accept it, but nevertheless, there is a comprehensive plan in place. And the two alternate or revisions of that comprehensive plan use the same comprehensive plan. It will change virtually little, if any. So why not allow and give authority to LCDC or Metro or other bodies to allow people who want to develop now to go ahead under the present comprehensive plan? This will save the integrity of the city's boundaries and will make it possible then for the city to go forward, present a final comprehensive plan, and for that to get acknowledged. Yet, let me say one thing more. If this bill must go forward and be passed by the legislature, then I suggest another compromise. Let's add to the bill an amendment allowing a 120-day period before it goes into effect. These 4 months would allow the City Council to endorse the citizen initiative, that is the 2013 comprehensive plan. It would go forward to the people on May the 20th. After successfully receiving the people's vote, there would be about 30 days remaining for the city to send the plan to LCDC for their acknowledgement. And I've been encouraged by LCDC that they would expedite their acknowledgement of that plan. This compromise only asks for 4 months. It's a win-win solution. The developers get to develop in concert with the rest of Damascus. The legislature is able to exercise its authority to enact a plan, or pardon me, a law, and LCDC will get a plan, and the city is not decimated. The city retains its integrity. And really, never in our history has a final plan been so near to completion. Now, I said a moment ago that I also represent a group, Citizens for Moving Damascus Forward, and you're going to hear our chairman over here on my right in just a few minutes. We were formed a year ago, to be a positive voice in the community, to offer compromise and moderation, to bring the people together, to build bridges, and to respect the law. It is a group that has gone forward to gather signatures of all the people within the last month, and we were successful in that effort, and there will be an initiative on May the 20th that will ask the people to support the 2013 comprehensive plan, and hopefully the people will vote for that plan. We as a group love Damascus. We want to see it to grow and blossom. We respect community, where we all want to work together to accomplish something that not one of us can do separately. That is the vision of the citizen for moving Damascus forward. Thank you for hearing me.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I'm Jan Lossley, and I've lived in Damascus for 33 years, so you've got me beat. And I want to thank each one of you for listening to us, and I want to thank you special for that comment you just made about Damascus and the people. Thank you, sir. I need to read my statement so I say it accurately. My family and I have lived in our home in Damascus for 33 years in May. By May, it'll be 32 now. Last night, I attended a public hearing at Damascus City Hall on the comprehensive plans. We as a city will be voting on this in May. We are almost at the finish line, and it's been a long time. If the bill HB 4029 passes, it will mean that the majority of citizens, myself and my neighbors included, will be the losers. The plan will be, we are so close to adopting, will no longer be accurate, and LCDC and Metro will not acknowledge it. We will be right back at square one again. We've worked for years on this plan, as you've heard a lot of people say, and we are so close. Please don't derail the opportunity for the majority of citizens, my friends and neighbors in Damascus, the ability to vote on a plan because of the minority, a beer company and a handful of self-interested property owners. I'm asking you for a no vote on HB 4029 on behalf of a majority of citizens, my longtime friends and neighbors in Damascus. Thank you. And thank him for saying it so much better than me. And thank you for your patience with me. Thank you.
Chair Roldan and committee, some of the stuff has been well covered, so my testimony is going to be fairly short here. My name is Richard Johnson. I live in Damascus, Oregon. I've lived there for a little over 20 years. I've been involved in the process on committees in Damascus since 2004. So I feel I'm pretty knowledgeable about what has happened and gone on there. And what I want to read is a statement that I got this morning from John Morgan concerning Damascus. He was our community development director. And basically, I think is considered probably one of the top, if not the top person in the state of Oregon, understanding comprehensive plan and land. And so I'll just read this statement. The Oregonian published a short story several weeks ago about my resignation as the community development director in Damascus. I haven't made a public statement until the end of the four-week notice period I contractually had to give to the city. That period and my employment formally ended February 7th. I went to Damascus as the community development director in January of 2012 when the community was reeling from a failed process to create its first comprehensive plan. Working with an amazing group of citizen volunteers, a terrific staff, and hundreds of citizens who participated in an extensive citizen involvement process, we were able to successfully create a comprehensive plan and a land use map. Development code, zoning map, transportation system plan, and the public facility plan. The work is based on balancing the many interests within the community to create the framework for an extraordinary city. The City Council is still struggling with adopting these critical documents. The short story is the work I went there to do is done. Although the city still has work ahead of it, this is an appropriate time for me to resign. I am hopeful the citizens of Damascus will finally adopt the plan they created and completed last June and get it acknowledged by the Land Conservation and Development Commission rather than fighting with the state and each other. It is critically important to the citizens and to the property owners to adopt this work and get on with their lives. Failure to adopt the June plan means many more months of fighting, taxpayer expense, additional elections, and denying the citizens their property rights, which come along with being a city. But for me, this time has come to return to full time to my counseling and teaching practice and the leadership development of the work of the Chinook
Institute of Civic Leadership. My time in Damascus was a huge success in helping the community create the plan for its future. And in my own experiences, as part of an incredibly difficult and complex project, I wish the good people of Damascus the greatest of success. I would like to say that we have come a long way, and we have spent tens of thousands of citizens' hours, millions of dollars getting to where we're at, and we are close to the finish line. And I think that obviously I'm opposed to this bill. I think it would be detrimental for reasons that have already been stated to go with it. I believe that there's several things that can transpire between now and even the May vote to where we can get a comprehensive plan passed. So thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for this group? No. Nope. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
So next we'll have Lowell Patton, Diana Helm, Steve Meisinger.
Thank you. I'll see you. Thank you, sir. What a gentleman.
And whoever wants to start first can.
You go first.
Thanks, Lowell. Chair Roblin and the committee members, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Diana Helm, and my business address is 1995 Southeast Highway 212 in Damascus. I'm a local business owner. I served on city council for 6 years. Today I'm testifying, though, as a private citizen. As you've heard, Damascus was allowed 4 years under state law to get its comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance in place. We incorporated in 2004, so it's been really 10 years technically now, and the city has still not approved a comprehensive plan, let alone zoning ordinances. There is talk of yet another election in May. They're going to be putting numerous plans on the ballot, 3 different plans, over 6,000 pages of documents for our citizens to supposedly understand. I can assure you that the citizens of Damascus will be even more confused and less likely to pass a plan than they are right now. Politics have blocked land use planning in Damascus for far too long. While serving on city council, we worked diligently to create a comprehensive plan that balanced the desires of our community. I am deeply frustrated that the current city council cannot agree on a plan that will allow businesses in the city to build and expand. While the dysfunction of politics in Damascus plays out, businesses and property owners pay the price. Our property values are held hostage, and our tax dollars are being wasted. General Distributors, who I'll refer to as GDI, approached the city several years ago with a beautiful plan for a distribution facility. This would be a gateway project that the city of Damascus could be proud of. GDI worked hard with the city for 5 years. Today, they cannot even file an application because there is still no comprehensive plan in place. But here's where some of your questions I think you might have. Even if there was magically a comprehensive plan approved and zoning was done, we have a city charter that has hamstrung our city from ever growing. There's been charter amendments done for several years that prevents us from charging fees. We can't charge SDCs. We can't charge for building permit fees, anything that a normal city would charge to operate as a regular city. These charter amendments have been put in place, and there's charter amendments that don't even allow us to spend the taxpayer monies that are brought in from the taxpayers. It's obvious to most of us that development will occur first on the west side of the city, where infrastructure is currently located. This bill would allow landowners along that border the option. It does not force them to de-annex from a failed city and at the same time promote growth and business opportunities that would greatly benefit our community. We need to allow businesses and developers, such as General Distributors, the freedom to use their land to expand their businesses, create jobs, and build communities. House Bill 4029 will allow trapped property owners relief from the gridlock in Damascus, and I fully support it.
Thank you.
For the record, my name is Steve Meisinger. I'm the general manager of General Distributors, Inc. My business address is 13895 First Street, Oregon City, Oregon 97045, and I'm testifying in support of House Bill 4029A. Chairman Roblin, members of the committee, GDI owns 23 acres of land in the city of Damascus. We wish to build a new center of operations for our business. Our project is shovel ready, and we need it to be finalized now because our business is bursting at the seams. After 5 years of working with Damascus, GDI still can't file a land use application for our property. State law says Damascus had 4 years to get its zoning in place. City has taken more than 9 years and still no zoning. We have 125 employees and $19 million of annual economic impact. We can grow these numbers with a new facility, but we need help. We need House Bill 4029A. We've asked Damascus twice to let us de-annex so we can do the planning through another jurisdiction. We've asked LCDC for help, but in an enforcement order, they indicated they don't have the power to force Damascus to do any planning. General supports enactment of a rational solution to the lack of land use process in the Damascus area. But when the City Council's best idea after 9 years is to send the voters three different comprehensive plans for consideration, we think that rationality has gone AWOL. And we have nowhere to turn for help except for the legislatures. Providing a legislative solution now will allow economic development to move forward without further delay. Our shovel-ready project will create jobs without further delay. Clackamas County needs input. Recent figures indicate that Multnomah and Washington counties have now exceeded the 2008 employment levels. Clackamas County is at 44%. Projects like ours will help turn these numbers around. But we have to have a way to get zoning. The economic benefit from our third-generation family business is significant and roughly 342 direct and indirect jobs, and there will be additional construction jobs that will result from the building and necessary improvements for the new 120,000-plus square-foot operations for our business. In addition, the property tax and revenues from these improvements will provide revenue for local governments to provide services. These tax revenues are genuinely needed by local governments. Building a vibrant, quality business community requires cooperation, proactive solutions, governmental cooperation, and timely decision-making. Damascus has failed on all these accounts. We ask the committee to pass House Bill 429A and end the last land use planning roadblock on our land. This will allow jobs to be created and the metro urban goals to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I guess I'm a little listening to you. I got hoarse.
At least you didn't fall asleep. Most people fall asleep.
Anybody, you've heard testimony here from people who have...
And your name?
I'm Lowell Patton.
Thank you, Lowell.
I own some property in Carver, which is now a part of Damascus. You've heard testimony from people who have lived in Damascus for... over 40 years. I would like to say I'm a...
That's for you.
Good.
Thank you.
I am a taxpayer and have been in Clackamas County for, I guess, 57 years. I've had owned property in Carver for at least 43 years. I've been doing business in the timber industry for 70 years. I currently have about 240 acres in this, which is now the city of Damascus, which had there not the city not formed would be an important part of the area right now. But and over the years we have attracted we've got the sewer in, we've got the public water, we've got a state highway through the property, we've got a new bridge right there across the Clackamas River. We've got an ideal site to be developed. We could have a more industrial area, which certainly Clackamas County needs. And one of the reasons that their bill failed when they submitted a comprehensive plan was that they didn't put any industrial area in it. And LCDC had to, and who knows what's going to come out of three new ones. I'm pretty sure one of them will have all parks, but and no industry whatsoever. When the first council was formed in Damascus, they had a member there that suggested, and they agreed that the area where I am, a big enough area, over 240 acres, should have its own master plan. So I spent money on developing a master plan, hired a planning firm, did geotech studies, did surveying, all of the contours, the whole Marianne, had the wetland studies, everything, and so we spent a lot of money getting this master plan put together. The city put a red line around it. We were told at the time that even if they didn't have a comp plan, that we could go ahead and develop our master plan. But then the council changes, and it's changing, and keeps changing, and like the senator said, I guess we should recall some of them, but it never happened. They recalled themselves or got voted out, so that never happened. And as you've heard before, we tried to de-annex, and we had the support of the mayor to do that. But it ended up 3-3, and we've been two blocked like that ever since. I think our only hope is that your committee can vote like the House did unanimously to pass this bill and put it on the floor of the Senate. So people like me and a big employer like General Distributors can move ahead. 10 years is too... I've been waiting 10 years, and I don't think I can wait much longer. You know, I would like to show you what has happened as far as the city council is concerned, because we were supposed to have a hearing on de-annexation, and it would have been a simple thing. All they had to do was to vote on it and pass it, and we could have de-annexed and gone ahead and developed where we were. But so in August or September of last year, there's supposed to be a city council meeting. And so we go to the city council meeting. But when I got to the door of the city council, here's what I found. On the door, printed out, been delayed until January of 2014, some 3 to 4 months ahead. That is the type of treatment that we've gotten from, like people say, there's a lot of well-meaning people there, but I hope you're not swayed by their wanting to delay it some more. It's been delayed too much. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, Mr.
No.
No. Thank you.
Thank you
all for being here. Next, we have Looks like Chris Tabor, Les Poole.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair Robin and committee members. I'm Chris Tabor. I'm also a longtime resident of Damascus, Oregon, for the last 36 years. There's a couple of things that are just out of touch, and I'm just going to start with that, which I just want to not forget. Representative Kennemer stated a little while ago that the city doesn't have a full council. That is not accurate. That changed last week, and all the city council seats are now full. If House Bill 4029 moves forward, tens of thousands of hours over the last 10 years by volunteer citizens will be thrown down the drain. That's why you see a motion here today. What a waste of energy and resource. And I ask you, what citizen in Damascus will ever want to volunteer for anything again after being treated like that? I'm here today. I'm not in the mayor's camp. I'm not in ex-councilwoman Helms' camp. I'm certainly not in Mr. Patton's camp. I'm here today just as a person who lives in the area, who has volunteered, and I just want you to please stand with the people of Damascus and oppose the small amount of private developers who are trying to fast-track HB 4029 for their own profit. This bill has been crafted to rob us from our rights to a public democratic process. After tens of thousands of volunteer hours and now being in the home stretch, this just isn't right. And very few of our citizens even know that we're down here debating this today. On November 6, 2012, Damascus voted on a local advisory vote that would have allowed the city to ask Metro to amend the UGB boundary around Damascus, since growth is below any of the previous projections. And the voters turned out, and they turned down that offer and favored keeping Damascus as it is in 2012. The majority of people of Damascus want their city to be the same size it is today because they understand that going backwards won't provide enough balanced inventory within the city for LCDC to approve any version of a comprehensive plan. Nor does carving up and reducing the city allow for future enough revenue to finance having a city. This is not an emergency. We all basically understand annexation, but de-annexation and its long-term effects are really muddy and unfair to the people who live in Damascus when applied the way this bill does. The creators of HB 4029 have told us there'll be no donut hole effect on the city of Damascus. Well, I do not see this as a truth because they did not take into consideration that not everyone in the bill's half-mile border around the city wants to de-annex. So this person does, and this person doesn't, and this person does, and does, and does. What about this guy? There's your donut hole. They also forgot to tell you that once the de-annexation domino begins, properties can ask to be annexed via any public right-of-way along highways and roads, according to a conversation that I had last spring with Happy Valley's planning manager via the telephone. That quickly erodes the one-half mile mentioned in 4029. So based on the current circumstances that we find ourselves in, I was very interested in Mr. DeYoung's proposed compromises, and that is something that I can get behind, and I believe that the majority of people in Damascus could too. Please remove this off-balance handicap
take it off the table. I strongly oppose 4029. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Les Poole. I've had property in Damascus, well, about a fourth as long as Lowell has, but for quite a while. And I've got over 25 years in land stewardship and ownership. I want to thank Lowell for leaving me some water. The real inherent problem here is that there are some real issues with Goal 14, with urbanization, and with how the state is conducting land use planning. And I'm not going to get too deep into that, but the situation in Damascus clearly indicates that. Currently, there's another measure in the legislature to address some of the shortcomings of how the urban growth boundary has been addressed. So what I see happening here is that we've got some real issues and complexities and a process that needs to change. And the problem in Damascus clearly exemplifies that. I know that the city has exceeded the deadline that the state set. You may know that Lapine far exceeded the deadline as well. Lapine is a recreational crossroads in Deschutes County, whereas we're trying to create a whole new city right on the edge of Happy Valley. It would be ludicrous to not say that what the lady just mentioned, that we're going to see what we like to call cherry-picking annexations. We're going to see haves and have-nots. We're going to see what we've already seen around the perimeter of Happy Valley, and that is annexation of certain roads. After this hearing, I invite you to look at a GIS map of the boundary of Happy Valley on the south and on the east side. I'm not here to be little Happy Valley. They're being opportunistic. They certainly, from what I see, support this. But in a way, isn't that somewhat predatory? I believe it really is. And I find it troubling because we're pitting neighbors against neighbors. Former Councillor Helm discussed a dysfunction. She was in the middle of that dysfunction for years. And right now, there's a better balance on that council than we've ever had. And I don't want to give you that plea that, my God, they're finally getting close to the finish line, but I think they finally are. I'm a land use advocate. I fully, fully empathize with the property owners. And if I were to ever support something of this nature, I would adamantly expect a bill like this to not be put out as an emergency. And in this case, because obviously this bill only addresses cities that incorporate in a narrow parameter, which is Damascus, there would be no reason to not give them a more reasonable deadline. Setting up this an emergency situation now, especially based on what you've heard about what's currently happening, and in spite of all the rhetoric, there are some good things happening. There's a better balance, as I said, than we've ever had. The other thing I would say is that this bill sets a precedent that I find very troubling. Very troubling. I can just see the next time there's problems in Beaverton, Nike doesn't want to annex into Portland, Nike annex into Beaverton. Now we got problems in Beaverton. Suddenly Nike wants to leave Beaverton. You're going to be pitting neighbor against neighbor. I don't know if anyone that has testified before has really emphasized that to you. And judging by the vote in the House, I think there was probably a lack of understanding of that. So I strongly encourage you to put the brakes on this, rethink this, and it's really something that shouldn't move forward in spite of the intention. And I'll close by saying I think this is the first time I've ever opposed Bill Kenemer on a land use issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
I do. I've heard a couple of panels now say that the vote of the people, what I heard happened in November was a vote that was taken by the voters. It overwhelmingly passed, but it didn't pass far enough along to actually incorporate based on the safeguard of a super majority. So it seems to me, if you're talking about majorities, the majority seemed to speak, and about the part about being dysfunctional or pitting neighbors against neighbors, it seems like that's already happening there, because there's already requirements that the citizens who voted previously said any comp plan has to come before them. And so if you're not even able to settle something within that boundary, it seems like maybe restart needs to occur. I mean, it just seems to me, hearing saying that it didn't pass, well, it did pass. It just didn't pass to the level, the threshold of a super majority, because from what I heard earlier, it was 2-1.
You make a good point, and to clarify things, the vote to disincorporate a city that requires that majority is based on a percentage of the registered voters actually voting. A vast number of them did not show up, which either says to you they were not informed, maybe not aware, which I wouldn't necessarily support that, but I couldn't tell you either way, and that those that stayed home didn't want to change. People that want to make a change usually say yes.
My understanding from the vote was that a majority of people voted. It was that 51% didn't vote to disincorporate. That's a different thing than saying the majority of people were against it. So I just want to make sure. It did pass the number that were needed to have a valid election. Over 50% of the people voted. It's just
correct.
Over 50% of the voters didn't vote for this particular amendment. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe so.
I don't think that's
We'll figure that one out when something comes
and
up.
We'll be hearing from
we'll bring the mayor up next.
City, so that'll be clarified, I'm sure.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
Then we're going to go out of order a little bit and have another against panel, because I have some time limits. So Mayor Steve Spinnett, Councillor Bill Ware, and Peter Watts. We'll have all three of you come up right now. And just so people know, we have this room till now. We will stay until we get all the testimony, and the bill, we will not vote on it until Tuesday of next week. So we will be carrying the bill over so we can get everybody's testimony in. Some of our members may have to leave, just so you know. This will be in the record. If they have to leave, they will leave. But we're going to get every testimony before I leave tonight. So go ahead.
Greetings, Senator Roblin and the members of the committee. I'm Steve Spinnett, the mayor of Damascus. I'm a well-known advocate of private property rights. This bill is not about private property rights. This bill is the slow death of the city of Damascus. This bill is absolutely undermining the planning process in the city of Damascus. And I'll give you an example. Before I give you an example, I'm going to back up. This council has voted in a strong four-person majority to put two plans on the ballot for the voters. We will have two plans as a council referral on the May ballot. We've also agreed that if either of those two plans do not make the double majority threshold, the best performing plan will be on the November ballot. We are in agreement in Damascus today. And I think this bill, the threat of this bill, 4029, has really cemented us even in stronger agreement. It has been a marathon. It's been a bumpy marathon. But the size and scope of the development in Damascus, the planning in Damascus, is larger than anything. It's the largest urban growth expansion in the state's history. There is no other jurisdiction that we can compare to. To give a small urban growth, a city that already exists 4 years, to have a comprehensive plan is one thing. But to do a major corner of the Portland metro area will take longer. Right now, as far as the length of time, we're just shy of what Happy Valley took to pass their comprehensive plan, and that was a far smaller section. The Happy Valley right now, a population of roughly 15,000. In 20 years, Damascus will be 35,000+. So the scope, full build out could be upwards of 70,000. This is not a small project. House Bill 4029 absolutely undermines the planning process in Damascus. The example that I referred to, the plans to the voters, when the voters pass one, when we pass that, there is going to be roughly 6, 8, 10 month process for the DLCD and the Metro acknowledgement process. It is a timely process. When they acknowledge that, the current bill that the people passed will be obsolete. The border will have changed. The buildable lands inventory will have changed. Other technical data will have changed. The ratio of industrial and employment lands to residential lands will have changed. It will be House Bill 4029 will effectively make producing a comprehensive plan impossible. I am not exaggerating. I also want to say one more thing, too. Representative Kennemer says we can't agree on a seventh council person. March 3rd, we'll have a seventh council person that will be sworn in, and he was agreed to by a unanimous vote of the council. It has been a bumpy road, but we've ironed out the bumps. We have been in a marathon. We have 100 yards to go. Please don't stop us for this last 100 yards. There has been an amendment that has passed through Legislative Council. Consider that amendment. That allows us to November. If we can't pass a comprehensive plan by November, I would invite the legislature here in the state of Oregon to act. But let us finish our process, because we will finish our process. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairman Roebland and committee senators. My name is William Ware. I'm a resident and city councilor of Damascus, Oregon. On February 13, 2014, the Damascus City Council unanimously passed a motion urging a no vote on House Bill 4029. There are reasons that this bill is damaging to a number of our citizens. It interferes with the best efforts of our council to resolve the issue of the finalization of the comprehensive plan and other challenges that our city faces. Our council is diligently completing the process to bring two comprehensive plans before the voters this May. I'd like to speak about one part of House Bill 4029. This would be Section 2, 1 through 9. I'll just highlight some points from that. It says in Section 2, number 1, 10 days after the receipt of the written statement required under Section 1.3 of this Act, the legislative body of the city shall cause notice of a public hearing on the question of the withdrawal of the tract to be held within 30 days after the receipt of the written statement. Number 3, at the public hearing, residents of the city may appear and be heard on the question. Number 4, after receiving testimony at the public hearing, the legislative body of the city shall withdraw the tract from the city by an order or resolution adopted during a work session or immediately after the close of the public hearing. Number 6, if the city refuses or fails to adopt the order or resolution within the 30-day period subscribed, the withdrawal of the tract is deemed complete. And lastly, on 9, a city which a tract has been withdrawn under this section may not annex the tract for a period of 10 years following the withdrawal unless the owner of the tract submits a petition to the legislative body of the city. Now, our city has a process for deannexation.
When a stakeholder applies for deannexation, the council holds public hearings. There is an opportunity for the applicant and those affected by this request to submit testimony before council. If it is in the best interest of the city, then the request is granted. House Bill 4029 would take away local control of such a matter. It would cause financial damage and negative livability issues for surrounding properties. It would erode the tax base that the city needs to function with. You'll be hearing from large moneyed stakeholders. You may be hearing from the city of Happy Valley that has a ravenous appetite for Damascus taxable land. I'm a stakeholder, but a different kind of stakeholder. I own less than an acre of land in Damascus. My wife and I have lived in Damascus for 38 years. Our children went through the local school system. Both my wife's parents and my parents lived in Damascus for years before they each passed away. Other citizens of Damascus also have a stake. It is in wanting to maintain our quality of life, raise families, and participate in our community. Please vote no on HB 4029. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Peter Watts. I'm one of the city attorneys for the city of Damascus. Though I'm testifying on my own behalf today, and my timesheet will show a vacation, though kind of a stressful vacation, I have to tell you. Yesterday, I spent time preparing the ordinances to get the comp plans that the city is going to put on the May ballot ready, and did all the things that you need to do, like count the words and make sure that we fit the statutory guidelines. Any comp plan requires a thoughtful balancing of industrial and employment and residential and parkland. And that is going to be nearly impossible if this bill passes. The two owners that testified in front of you, Mr. Patton and the representative of GDI, between the two of them, they have about 267 acres that will be eligible for withdrawal. That's 2.67% of the city's acres in one swoop. Representative Fagan and Representative Kenemer indicated that they were doing this to help the city. I don't think that this will help the city. I think rather it will be death by a thousand cuts, because every time the city goes through the process in order to come up with a comp plan, there will be voters on the edge of the, or there will be property owners on the edge of the city that will be able to de-annex. And if Happy Valley picks up those properties and annexes them, then that moves the half-mile barrier that much closer. And it creates a ripple effect that allows a whole new section of properties to de-annex. And if the city is doing what they're charged with doing, which is coming up with a thoughtful balancing of industrial, employment, residential, and parklands, how can they do it when the target is constantly moving? In between the time that these ordinances go to the county clerk, and the election in May, if this bill passes, based on the testimony we heard today, 2.6% of the city plus will be gone. That's industrial land that is part of the comp plan. That land is necessary in order to pay for all the urban services that the state and metro will require the city to pay, and it becomes impossible. And it will just get harder as more and more people annex. And Happy Valley is in an incredible, enviable position in that they will get to select the easy-to-serve properties, bring them into their city, and get the tax base. They're not required to annex the difficult to serve areas, the expensive to serve areas, and if those areas de-annex from the city of Happy Valley, they will be unincorporated Clackamas County. And we don't know what that means yet. Some people think it means that it'll be zoned 5-acre lots. Other people think that the county may have to provide urban services. We're still finding out. And as areas get cherry-picked from Damascus slowly, cut by cut, like peeling an onion, it will become that much harder for the city to have the tax base to serve the remaining properties, making it incredibly difficult that Damascus will ever achieve its promise. The mayor mentioned that this process has been like a marathon, and it has been, and he's mentioned that it's been a bumpy process, and it has been too, but we are getting close, and the voters will be able to vote in May. And then if they don't select one in May, in November, And I would ask that at the very least you consider Senator Thompson's amendment, which would prevent the properties from de-annexing prior to that vote on the comp plan, because that is the only way that we, the city of Damascus, can do what we have been charged to do, which is to thoughtfully balance the industrial, employment, residential park, and other lands. That cannot happen if properties are slowly getting sliced from the city. So thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes. Thank you, Senator Roblin. And actually, I have a statement because I might have to leave.
I understand, and I usually
wait till everybody testifies, but
right.
If that big guy comes back in, that means I got to go. You know, I think we have to be conscious that there is a group of people who have decided to become a city. They've drawn a boundary, and yes, it's been a long time, probably unacceptably a long time. If I was Mr. Patton, I would be as frustrated as you are. However, we have to take into consideration is that you're really forming a democracy of a group of people. And sometimes that does take some time. And we don't have to look too far into our own history. Because when we declared our independence in 1776, it took those states 15 years to come up with a document that they all agreed on, which is our Constitution now. So sometimes this formation does take some time. But it also takes clear and strong leadership. And I think you need to take that into consideration as you go forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions with the group? Seeing none, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to have Judith Flick, Jim Searing, and Mayor Lori the Reamer. And Steve Shupp, is that a pro or a con? For the bill or against the bill? Okay, thank you.
I don't mind going first. I guess I'm going first.
I guess you're first.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin and committee members. My name is Jim Searing, and I'm a citizen of Damascus. And I'm here with some of my fellow residents that came with me today to ask for your support of House Bill 4029. I've lived in Damascus, we've all done the numbers game, for 52 years, and I've been very active in my neighborhood. Senators, this bill brings back hope and opportunity for property owners in Damascus to be able to develop their land after nearly a decade. The city is almost 6 years past due on the comprehensive plan. That is the fact. This bill is not about the city council. It's not about Happy Valley. It's about the people. It's about people's rights. It's about property owners' opportunities. It's about economic development and prosperity for our community. 3 months ago, nearly 3,000 of us voted for change. This bill gives those 3,000 residents an opportunity for change. You've heard from Mr. Patton from General Distributors. I have with me 10 letters from my neighbors. You received all of them. They all called your office. They all emailed these to you. I'd like to read one sentence from just two of those letters. Mr. and Mrs. Roger Roth on Troge Road. About a few years ago, we received an offer from a developer for our 11 acres, but the city of Damascus was unable to complete a comprehensive plan, so the deal fell through. Mr. Mike Watson, in 2007, I and several of my neighbors were visited by developers hoping to purchase our properties. The city was unable to pass a comprehensive plan, and the developers went away. There are many, many other individuals who have been affected, not just the large property owners. Senators, you have no idea how much this means to the people, and I say that very, very sincere. to be represented by our state legislators in the House to vote 51-0 to stand up for the citizens means more to us than you will ever know. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
Senate Chair Roblin, members of the committee, I'm Lori Dreamer, the mayor of Happy Valley, 16,000 Southeast Misty, Happy Valley, Oregon, 97086. My intention today was not to testify. I was just here listening since we're the neighboring jurisdiction, but I've heard our Happy Valley's name thrown around a couple times today, so I thought it would be good to go on record. Because I am the leader of the city, and I thought it was important that you hear from me today. So in a little history, Damascus and Happy Valley have fostered a great relationship, despite what maybe you've heard today or maybe what you possibly are thinking. And I wouldn't want you to base your decisions on fear that you're pitting one jurisdiction against the other. I've served with Mayor Westcott and currently with Mayor Spinnett and the council for the past 10 years. Damascus Comprehensive Plan issue has not been on the radar of Happy Valley, except for the fact that our East Happy Valley zoning follows the Damascus Boring Concept Plan, and we had looked forward to the future development in East Clackamas County. In the last 2 years, the business and landowners have started to feel the backlash with the lack of the comp plan in their jurisdiction. Happy Valley has repeatedly stayed off the record on this issue. About a year ago, Happy Valley was approached by a few businesses on the border of Happy Valley and Damascus asking if they were successful in de-annexation, would Happy Valley be willing to accept them through annexation? Our answer has been and continues to be, we are open for business. I've had a conversation with Mayor Spinnett about a year ago saying that he believed the property rights and believed these businesses had a right to move along and that he would vote in favor of letting these businesses de-annex. And he would be supportive of annexation to Happy Valley. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for those businesses when the entire council voted on it. Shortly after, those businesses approached the state late last year in the regular session. There was a House bill that came forward with general distributors who tried to move this along. Mayor Spinnett was in support of that. That bill didn't go anywhere either, and Happy Valley was not on record to be land grabbing as they suggested. Damascus has since had numerous extensions by the state to adopt their comprehensive plan. Damascus has also had a measure on the ballot to disincorporate, which did not pass, except by the popular vote. After that failure, those businesses are trapped and have garnished a larger support by several homeowners and other landowners. A large group, about 40, met with myself and Happy Valley staff about 3 months ago, asking the question again, if we find a way out, will you take us in? And our answer was, we will be open for business when that happens. So here we are today. Those businesses and owners are now working with their legislators, Representative Kennemer and Representative Fagan. And so why is Happy Valley here today? We did not initiate this process. We are here in reaction to these 10 years as a bordering jurisdiction. Happy Valley is not here to land grab. Happy Valley is here to support that if this bill moves forward, we believe that those who are successful in de-annexing will have an option to consider Happy Valley. Happy Valley is prepared to accept those businesses and landowners who have the right to their property rights and a fair and reasonable land use process. In regards to the testimony that some of you have heard today, potential cherry picking by Happy Valley is not what we do. Happy Valley has accepted every single annexation by petition only that has been submitted to us on a voluntary basis. This is not cherry picking, but being supportive of response and being responsive to property owners who want to join our city. I know Mayor Spinnett and I have a relationship that's been positive, and this is not going to change that in my opinion, but we are here to represent our current jurisdictions. The City of Happy Valley adopted its East Happy Valley comp plan in 7 years, which included the time it took Metro to complete the Damascus Boring Concept Plan. After we received the go-ahead, we finished our comp plan in 2 years. So it can be done, and we're here to say that we are leaders of our own districts, and I am not here to discredit the work that has been done because I have worked with all of them. We are here in reaction to that, and we will take those annexations if this happens. And so I just want you to be clear, we are not pitting one jurisdiction against another. So thank you for your consideration in this testimony.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Judy Fick, and I am one of the owners of General Distributors Incorporated. My business address is 13895 First Street, Oregon City, Oregon 97045. I would like to provide each committee member with an on-the-ground view of what it's like to get approval to grow a business and create jobs within the city of Damascus. General Distributors is an Oregon-based, family-owned business started over 80 years ago and is in third generation of family ownership. We currently have a payroll of approximately $9.1 million, and we provide 125 family-wage jobs. Because of the nature of the beer distributorship business, General Distributors has a significant indirect job inputs in the greater Clackamas County area, including 53 indirect jobs due to the purchase of goods, equipment, and services in the local community, 151 induced jobs related to the purchase of local goods by our workers, and 18 jobs due to capital investment. We have supported the local community with over $400,000 in contributions since 2008. In 1974, we purchased our current warehouse in Oregon City, which has 60,000 square feet of space. The difference in the distribution business between 1974 and 2014 is night and day. With the advent of craft beers and the addition of wine, juice, and energy drinks to our portfolio, our business has grown more complex, and we are literally bursting at the seams at our current location, and we now need more than 120,000 square feet of space. We anticipated this growth, and in 2008, we made the significant decision to purchase 23 acres in Damascus. Prior to the purchase, we talked with Damascus officials, reviewed proposed zoning transportation infrastructure, and determined that Damascus was a place where we could build our new facility. Since 2008, General Distributors employees and my family have attended literally hundreds of planning advisory committee meetings, transportation meetings, informational meetings, planning commission meetings, and city council meetings. We have worked carefully with the City of Damascus planners, ODOT, the county, and others. 172nd Avenue was constructed specifically with our business in mind, and oversized sewage links were constructed within easy reach of our property through our efforts. Without any direction from the city, we have worked with our neighbors to address their concerns, and we have reached agreements with where we provide access, additional setbacks, and vegetative screenings on the north side of our property. Our expectation was that Damascus would follow the rules and a comprehensive plan and zoning ordinance would be in place in 2010. We envisioned construction of our new 120,000 square foot operation center in 2012, and we expected to be growing our business and hiring new employees by today's date. However, petty political disputes have blocked any progress, notwithstanding the good work of staff and literally hundreds of hours of input and testimony we have given to the city's processes. The law requires Damascus to have its zoning in place in 4 years, but they have now been without zoning for more than 9 years. Because the City of Damascus has failed to get zoning in place, General Distributors has been unable to build on its urban property. We are stuck in our existing warehouse where we are unable to grow and create more jobs. The Damascus City Council has worked to actively block normal zoning processes. We have petitioned the city to de-annex, as allowed by state law, so we could seek zoning through some other local government. However, our two requests have been rejected by the City Council without discussion. We are a small business but a vibrant business. We desperately need to build new operations facilities so we can grow our business. To do this, we simply need the City of Damascus to approve a zone that's been sitting on the planner's desks for more than 5 years. LCDC has brought enforcement proceedings against Damascus, but LCDC admits that it does not have the power to compel Damascus to do any zoning. Damascus is the only place in the state of Oregon within city limits that does not have urban zoning. House Bill 4029 will let GDI get out of this nightmare and start a shovel-ready project that will create new jobs. Please pass House Bill 4029 to fix the Damascus problem. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. And because we did two, Brian Gooney, William Cox, and Hank Brown. Whoever's going to proceed.
I'll go ahead.
Okay.
For the record, my name is Brian Gosney. My handwriting was probably pretty shaky when
I
signed
that. I see the S now.
It's G-O-S-N-E-Y.
Just thought two O's.
Okay. I wrote good afternoon, but maybe I should say good evening, Chair Roblin and committee members. I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to come today and testify in favor of House Bill 4029. I am an under-treasurer for a large nonprofit organization headquartered in Gladstone, but more importantly, I've been a citizen of Damascus for the past 16 years. Like my fellow community members, I have been paying city tax and a lot of it, and I've been waiting for a comprehensive plan for the last 9 years. My home and property of 8 acres is not located within a half-mile radius of an existing city, and therefore I will not personally benefit from the passage of this bill. But several of my neighbors will, and I strongly support their desire to leave the city of Damascus. We've heard today that the concerns by our local politicians that Damascus will be eaten away one half mile at a time. I guess that's possible, but I guess it begs the question, so what? I don't mean to say that flippantly, but we did have an election in an off-cycle election, I don't know, but an election in November where 68% of the citizens came out and voted on a measure. 68% voter turnout. As compared to a 49% voter turnout for the average for the Clackamas County. Out of that 68% turnout, 2-1 voted in favor of disincorporating the city and letting us go. Yes, based on current interpretation of election law, the measure to disincorporate was not successful and nearly 3,000 voters became disenfranchised. I did say we've been waiting for 9 years, and just today I've heard now the vote for a comprehensive plan is being moved again to November. If I heard correctly, I think that's what I heard.
I think they said they would have two comp plans up here in May, and then if neither one got the votes, they put the one that got the most votes.
Okay. I understood that we had to promise that we'd have a comp plan by May, but I stand corrected. Thank you. With a 51-0 vote in favor of House Bill 4029, the House of Representatives have given some of us hope. I would say the majority of us hope. Hope that someone in government is listening to us. I encourage all of you to act thoughtfully and quickly report this bill back to the Senate floor with a favorable recommendation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Hank Brown, and I've had my property for coming on 14 years. My property line is the dividing line between Damascus and Happy Valley. I'm an optimistic individual. I'm involved in scouting. I've mentored 14 Eagle Scouts. I serve as assistant council commissioner for 5 districts, overseeing a lot of the scouting activity that takes place in this area. And the glass is always half full. I'm not going off of notes. You know, I've put down some notes, but it's better from the heart. I really moved in, and when my wife and I moved in, we sat out on our hill and looked out at what now is New Seasons on Sunnyside Road. There were 4 lights out there. And I told my wife, I said, honey, someday soon, that hill is going to be filled with lights. And we watched, and we saw it happen. I was optimistic with Happy Valley, but I saw, I'm a property. We bought the property, raised our son there, excited about where we live, like what the community represents, got involved, met with Dee Westcott, met with Randy on the council, just to figure out what's the process, how long does this take? We went through study groups and focus groups, and we had all that done. And when we got through with that, it was optimistic. It was like, okay, we're finally going to have a plan. We're finally going to have zoning, because when I would talk to Randy and to Dee Westcott, he informed me, as an official of the city, it takes time to do this. It's probably about 4 years. In 2008, you're going to see this. And so we were optimistic. I receive a letter in the mail as this has gone down to, and I don't know all the terms, guys. I'm not going to get into that. It was sent down there, and all of a sudden I get a letter from the newly elected mayor telling me that he disagrees with the entire city council and that we as a citizen group should vote down the plan. So we spent all of this money and all of this time to put this together, and it changed. I've heard a lot of people today talk about, well, we just need time. Some of this was self-inflicted. Some of this during this period of time, you know, it's like how many times can you shoot yourself in the foot? So the citizenry was patient. I was patient. I've got a couple of acres. I would like to live there comfortably, and at some point, I would like to divide it out. I'm not a big land mogul. I don't have millions of dollars to invest in things. This is part of my retirement. This is what I planned on. And there's lots that I've talked to that are in the same scenario. So we came up with, not we, because I got involved in it. You know, they said, some people said that you didn't see, maybe some of the citizenry didn't know. You could not go through Damascus and not see the signs. It would be impossible. You'd have to be blind to go through the city of Damascus during this recall of the, you know, disincorporation. You'd have to be. There's just no way you couldn't. So half of the population, 3,000 people, said, we've had enough. It's fun. We've had enough. All we want to do is move on. That's what we want to do, move on. I am optimistic. But I am not as optimistic. When I meet somebody, and I get involved with a lot of people all over the place, and I tell them where I'm from, you know the next thing out of my mouth? I'm from Damascus. We're the poster child for dysfunctional government. We have gone through people to make the plans. How many? 7, 6 to get there? That's a lot of transition. You look at the legal fees that Happy Valley has spent or other cities around there have spent, and the legal fees that Damascus has spent, it's embarrassing. Is there passion in my voice? Yeah. I'm optimistic. I truly am. In all this madness and highly orchestrated event, I'm optimistic. But I've had enough. They've had the time. They have planned. They're now, you know, I didn't even know this thing was taking place, that 51% of this government here could say, you know, we need to look at this. That's a big statement. That's not a small statement. 51%, not 5 saying no. You're talking Republicans and Democrats, guys. They can't get along on anything most of the time. I mean, look at the news. 51% said yes. I don't do this. I don't come down and speak to these things. It's not my nature. I'd rather deal with a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout or a Venture Scout and get them to become an Eagle if they want to be. And sit back and mesmerize that they made it and wow, what a change. But this is frustrating. And I'm not alone. You know, I'm watching a transition take place, and everybody's talking about how they're going to get there and how we're going to get there, and they just need more time. They have had enough time. I know, you know, everybody's got their own views and everybody's got their, you know, the agendas. That's fine. As a citizen who pays taxes and who is involved in the community, not in the big limelight, but behind the scenes, this is frustrating. It's an embarrassment to the city government. It's frustrating for the citizenry and for the state. The state's involved in it now. I mean, you can pick up, if you Googled Damascus, somebody talked about Googling Damascus. Google Damascus. See how much information comes up there. It's amazing. It's amazing. Okay? Please vote yes on this.
Thank you.
Chair Roblin, members of the commission, my name is William Cox. I come to this position and age and state, a stage in my life after having battled, like many of you that are familiar with the land use laws in this state, battled the law, the wars. I started out, I was appointed by the then governor as one of the initial members of the Land Use Board of Appeals. I helped write first 500 opinions that LUBA registered and recorded in the state. I have since practiced law and started out as being hired by Mr. Patton. And like the city attorney, I guess, he's here on a vacation. Well, I must be on a vacation too, because I didn't start out doing this for free, but it's turned out to that because it's gone on so long. I feel that I have an obligation as a person who has spent 36 years as a land use attorney, almost exclusively as a land use attorney, to say that the devil is in the details, and you've always heard this. I've heard people come up here and say tonight that they're worried about the they're not going to get a Democratic vote on whatever happens to their land in the neighborhood. The problem is that, yes, they will. They have to be heard in whoever processes these applications, whatever jurisdiction processes these applications, they get a chance to be heard if they're within a notice area, or if they're not, they just show up, they can have their say. That's democracy. Somehow this deal, that whether it goes into Happy Valley, Clackamas County, or Damascus, they're going to give up some democratic protections, is just hogwash. The land use laws in Oregon are so velcroized that you can't do anything without a public hearing. You hear about this idea that there's two comp plans being submitted. There are three comp plans being submitted. One that's being submitted has been recently, by initiative, put back on the ballot. And that is the one that the city council would not send out to the public for a vote. The city council split 3-3. That comp plan never saw the light of day. So now there's going to be three. There's one by one faction of the city council. There's another by another faction of the city council. And there's then the third one, which none of the city council wanted out. So then we have to have this charter amendment that says that the public, before the comp plan goes to LUBA or to LCDC for acknowledgement, that comp plan has to be voted on by the people. So you have three comp plans that are going to run against each other. None of them are going to get a sufficient majority. So what are we then? We're back to maybe January or November. But what if they not even get a vote then either? There is no other city in this state that requires the citizenry to vote on a comprehensive plan, which is so technical that you can't even read it unless you're an attorney. And they're going to vote on it. It becomes a popularity matter. We hear this neighbor say, we want to keep this town the same size as it is now. Well, if that's what they want, they're doing a very good job of it, because nothing's happening.
Fairly quickly, because we've got two more people and we're about a half hour over.
Okay. The other thing is this onion peel concept I keep hearing about. That law that you have, the bill in front of you, allows the city to stop that at any time. All they have to do is adopt a comp plan. And then nobody else is going to come along and peel the onion. But as long as they can't adopt a comp plan, what difference is it to them? So, thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
No.
Our last two people, one on each side, so I guess we're evening this out. We've got Steve Shupp and Paul Herbersnick.
Rubber Nick.
Okay, thank you.
I'll cede the floor to my colleague here in opposition.
Okay.
Chair and committee members, my name is Steve Shupp. I don't live in Damascus, but I've been watching the Oregon land use adventure for a good many years, and adventure is putting it kindly. What could go wrong? All the city had to do is put a label on every piece of land and make some designations and move on. Unfortunately, when Mary looked at Peter's land, she wanted his designation, and he wanted Mary's designation, and Richard wanted half of both of those designations, and Philip wanted no designation. And so when people look at Damascus and they holler, well, they're loggerheads and they're dysfunctional, it's an outrage and they're embarrassment. Well, I think you need to look beyond Damascus and exactly why Mr. Patton cannot develop his land
and everyone else in Damascus ever since they became a city. Because before they became a city, they were free to apply for land use under the county comprehensive plan. And what happened? Did the city of Damascus decree that they could no longer use their land? No. It was Oregon's land use law and Metro who decreed that you cannot do anything until you approve a comp plan. And I was suggesting to you that the idea of land designation is so fatally flawed that it's not surprising to me that 10 years has gone by, because if you look at greater efforts in the region and the state, you can look around the landscape and find the exact same thing. We found out today that years of hard work and millions of dollars have resulted in the return, remand by the Oregon Court of Appeals, the urban and rural reserve plan that Metro created. So are they an embarrassment and an outrage for wasting all that money and all that time because they couldn't simply apply land designation in an rural reserve, an urban reserve designation? They couldn't draw a map to agree on that? Well, of course they couldn't. And this is what I would compel the senators to look at broader view at. Why did Damascus get entrapped in this circumstance? Land designation. In my neighborhood in Tualatin, there's an area between Tualatin and Wilsonville that it was brought into the UGB some, I think, 6 years ago. Nothing's happened there. It's inside the UGB. Why? Because it has to be master planned first. Metro is prohibiting, the Oregon land use law is prohibiting anyone from using those parcels. There's a lot of sizable parcels in there, flat, close to I-5. It could be used. No one can apply for land use, just like Mr. Lowell. And so I would encourage you to take the look that really what compels all this problem, and it's a statewide issue. And if I were to suggest to you that, and I have a remedy, because when you look at the land use law, on its face it doesn't work, but there's been some analysis done, and I've done some research, and I can tell you that, you know, we need to have more flexibility for future decision makers by including more undesignated land, that the Portland region already lacks the national average and is significantly below similar-sized metropolitan regions. Now, it would be one thing if I came here and told you, and I got a bundle of other assessments of the Portland region of what's happened.
It's really not about the bill.
I hate to ask, but I don't think what we're talking about now is germane to the bill.
I understand, but I'm going to get to my finished point here, please.
Go very quickly.
I will. But this isn't me making this assessment. This is the Coalition for a Prosperous Region, and I got copies I gave to you because it's the Clackamas County Business Alliance, the Portland Business Alliance, and the whole litany of usual people that are in the stakeholder position in the region. And so I would compel you to, you know, look at this end of the road here in Damascus and not pass this bill. Don't slap Damascus around for something that is a greater problem, and because they're almost there. And if I want one more thing, the previous bill from the last session, 708, it didn't need to seek approval from Metro. You're the legislature. That bill would have allowed Mr. Lowell or Mr. Patton to develop his land and others under the county comprehensive plan until the city was approved. So, you know, there was other options and there are today.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Roblin, Senator Prozanski, thank you for your extraordinary patience and your willingness to sit with us. And I will try and keep my remarks brief, and if I don't, would you please tell me? I feel like Bill Murray in Groundhog's Day. We were here a year ago, and what was the problem? Well, you know what the problem was?
You need to mention your name.
I'm sorry. I'm Paul Ribernick. My business address is 805 Southwest Broadway, Suite 1900, Portland, Oregon, 97205. The city promised this action. They didn't. They didn't deliver. What have they done since then? John Morgan, who was eulogized just a second ago, the former planning director who resigned on the 31st of January, leaving them with no planning horsepower whatsoever. They have one professional planner now. He called me up and said, it's dead. It's dead. It's gone. The city council locked 3-3. They couldn't, on the last day available, refer a comprehensive plan, some comprehensive plan, to the voters in November 2014. The city manager was fired about the same time. Councillor Westcott, in disgust, resigned at the same time. We heard today an extraordinary advance that in 6.5 months they were able to find a replacement so we can move forward. mass resignations from the Planning Commission, all kinds of city councils, and there's still no plan on the ballot. We heard the city attorney today say they're working on it, and I wrote all the things. It's still not on the ballot. And DLCD, in its February 14, 2010 report, that's 6 days ago, said it's not going to cut it, that neither of the two plans, the mayor's plan or Mr. Jackman's plan, neither one of those will cut it. They are not in compliance. They don't protect employment plans. And Mr. Cox is correct. There's not going to be two plans to confuse the voters. There are going to be three. On that same day, February 14th, Oregon's birthday, DLCD ordered sanctions. They said, enough is enough. You have failed to make substantial progress, which is the test. And they deducted $300,000 from the city's coffers. The city attorney stood there and said, it's not really a big deal because we can't spend all the money that we have anyway. Go ahead. And LCDC said, we don't have the power to force them to do anything. And what we're here today asking you for is, to use another bad movie analogy, you're our last hope, Obi-Wan. We are out of options. The city council can't get it across the finish line. You heard the mayor today say it, we're 100 yards from the finish line. The finish line kind of looks like this. The very best case scenario would be that one of these three comprehensive plans would be selected in May. The city attorney just sent out a memo saying probably that's not going to happen, and we're probably looking at best a second election in November. But let's assume the very best thing. It goes to LCDC. We already know LCDC can't do it. They have to send it back. The city has to amend it. They then have to send it out to the voters again. It's the same problem. Then it has to go back to LCDC, and only then could we have zoning in place. We have a zoning application to build, and then we have the inevitable appeal in Oregon, and then we can file a building permit. We're 2 or 3 years from anyone in Damascus building anything, and we're here to ask you for support. 51 colleagues across the hall said this might be a good idea, and we ask you to follow up with them. Just a couple of things. Councilor DeYoung is a very, very sincere man, and he's here speaking his heart, but his compromise can't work. You have to acknowledge a comprehensive plan. It's comprehensive because you can't do it piecemeal by piecemeal, and DLCD in its February 14 memo said, absolutely not. We're not going to do this piecemeal. 120 more days was the other alternative. Please don't do that. Let's do it now. It's not just property owners, individual property owners, and big businesses. The North Clackamas County School District cannot build a school that it needs. It happens to be on Mr. Patton's land, but they can't build that school that's needed for the fast-growing area because there's no zoning in place. They can build a house there, but no school. There was some talk about cherry stem annexations. This bill doesn't allow cherry stem de-annexations, and it requires a property to be within a half mile and to be on the border. There will be no donut holes. I wish Senator Bearsugar was here because we could. The vote was there's 6,900 registered voters in Damascus. 2,900 of them voted to kill the city, and 1,600 voted to keep the city. 68% voted, 63-36 voted, but that's not enough. There's a lawsuit pending about that, of course. All the arguments about Happy Valley taking much, much longer than us and we aren't being treated fairly, all that was heard by LCDC and roundly rejected. The commission said that just doesn't make any sense and that's not correct. We don't need to go over that again here. All we're asking is that just put something that allows people to go forward and do something with their land. It's the right thing to do. Thanks.
Thank you. So thank you for staying with me as well, Senator Brzezinski. I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 4029A. I'm going to move 4029A to Tuesday for just the work session. I've also moved the work session for 4142A, and we had scheduled a work session for 4128. We will not reschedule that. So with that,
you can always...
Always post it if we had to, but yeah. So with that, we are going to adjourn today's meeting. Thank you all for being here. meeting. Thank you all for being here.